faith-filled finance. All major UK bank accounts. One app. Provision is built by Christians to help you steward what God's given you. Track your spending, saving, and giving in one place. Join the waitlist now at provision.money and get your first month free. That's provision.money.
Leadership File on Premier.
It's my joy to welcome you to the Leadership File, the show that aims to help you lead as Christ would have you lead, wherever he has placed you. I'm Andy Peck, your host, and whether you listen live on a Sunday or one of the many thousands who catch up via the podcast, it's great that you can join us. Well, I'm delighted to welcome back to Leadership File Will van der Hart. He's here to talk about themes in his latest book and how they will resonate with us as leaders. The book is called The Power of Belonging. It's co-written with Wad Waller, and it's subtitled Discovering the Confidence to Lead with Vulnerability, and is a book I believe is destined to be as valued as their books on guilt, worry and perfectionism, some of which we featured before on the Leadership File. So looking forward to unpacking the importance of belonging and the theme of shame, which also comes up in the book. Will is an ordained minister in the Church of England who serves as a pastoral chaplain with Holy Trinity Brompton in West London and is director of the Mind and Soul Foundation. So welcome back, Will.
Thanks, Andy. It's great to be back with you.
And congratulations on the book.
Thank you. It's been a solid 2 years of work, but it's great to finally have it in my hands.
So. Sure. So some definitions first so that we're all on the same page, so to speak. The book is called The Power of Belonging. So what sense are you addressing the belonging issue in this book?
So what we argue is that effectively we all long to belong. We look at a piece of psychology that Baumeister and Leary did called The Need to Belong. And I've worked in education before I was a priest, and we did a lot of work on attachment theory. But I always thought attachment theory started at point B rather than point A. And I was always asking, well, I'm not sure why we want to attach. Mm. But belongingness theory is the theory of the purpose of our attachment, that actually we're all born with an innate desire for a minimum quality of lasting, positive, interpersonal relationship. So effectively, we're created for connection, we long to belong, and that power, that motivation to belong, affects so many of our different decisions in life and leadership. So the book is really tapping into this idea that we long to belong, but then it's looking at what obstacles there are to our belonging. And actually what we found is that so many leaders, so many individuals, whether they're leading or not, feel a deep sense of unbelonging. They feel that they don't quite fit in. They feel that they're kind of living life as a fraud. They feel that if people knew what they were really like, they wouldn't want to be friends with them or be with them, or certainly wouldn't let them lead. And that sense of fraudulence and shame, I think, is becoming more and more common in our society. And people feeling more and more that they don't fit in, that they don't really belong here. So we really want to re-engage the power of belonging and say, actually, it's possible to get back to a place of deep belonging, and that will have a revolutionary impact on your leadership and on your life.
Well, we'll unpack that a little bit later, but one of the aspects that stops us sensing belonging is shame, and you contrast that with guilt, and you use a metaphor which I thought was very powerful and helpful, connected to smells in Anglican churches. So perhaps you could unpack that.
I mean, I think in Christian history, we've often coupled together guilt and shame. Some of the classic hymns and even modern worship songs sort of almost use guilt and shame interchangeably, but actually they are very, very different emotions. Mm. Guilt and negative feelings we have about things we've actually done. But shame is a negative feeling about ourselves, and shame is a much earlier emotion to guilt. So shame exists in children and babies even from 15 months. It's manifest there. Charles Darwin distinguished humans from other animals on the basis that babies turn away with shyness, which is a model of shame, and that obviously doesn't happen in the animal kingdom. Giraffes don't come out and suddenly hide their faces from other giraffes, but babies do. So it's a really instinctive and deep-rooted emotion. actually it's not effectively an emotion, it's what we call an affect. So it impacts all of the other emotions that we experience. So shame is a really powerful tool in our journey towards belonging. When I took over my first church as vicar in Harrow, there was this incredibly powerful sort of smell of what I call Anglican damp. If there are any Anglicans listening, they'll know what I mean. Sometimes when you go to Anglican church, you get this slightly sweet and sour damp smell, and it actually exists in Anglican churches around the world. So I remember walking into this first church and being overpowered by this smell. The church needed some renovations, which we did, and one of the renovations was the toilets, which were quite damp, and I thought that might be the issue. Having spent rather a lot of money on renovations, putting in a new toilet system, dealing with the plumbing, I was really disappointed about 6 months down the line to still be confronted by this really overpowering smell. A couple of months later, or a month later, I was walking around the church, a really big church, and I found a small locked door at the very back end of the church. And I asked the maintenance man to, you know, get the key because I wanted to go in there. And anyway, after lots of umming and ahhing, we got the key, opened the door. I went in with a sort of my camera phone torch and a stick, sort of like Indiana Jones kind of wiping away the cobwebs, fought my way in. And no sooner as I walked in and I got three steps down into what was obviously a basement system, I was confronted by a sea of just brassy, stinking water, putrid water. And anyway, the maintenance man didn't really know how deep this thing was. I certainly didn't. I called the fire brigade, told them, obviously, I'm the new vicar and the church is flooded. Probably the flood in 1902, but it was still flooded. They came along, pumped out the basement, 3,000 gallons of putrid water. Yeah. And this was the problem, you know, with the smell. Actually, we had to dry out the basement. We fitted a pump. We dried it. We put heaters in. We put lighting in. And it was a very functional space. But it reminded me of the fact that actually in life and certainly in leadership, we often dress up above the waterline. You know, we polish our presentation. Mm. We improve how we look, how we sound, how presentational we are. We do renovations from the first floor and upwards. When actually, if our basement is flooded, we will always be chased down by shame. And I think the work of this book is to pump out that shame basement and replace it with an integrity gym and actually know that there is solid foundations to our leadership. So many leaders I meet say, I'm terrified that if people really knew me, that they'd never follow me. And actually, I'm just holding on for retirement so I can then just go back to being myself, which is a tragic thing to say if you think about it. Actually, God's called us into leadership and we should feel like we're called and that we should actually be there. Sure. So that's the work we're trying to achieve.
Absolutely. And it occurs to me that for some folk, it was the fact that they didn't belong, which was kind of a spur to leadership. So some people who, you know, certainly in the world sense, they as they observe other individuals who are a bit different or a bit edgy, you know, even in the Christian world, that propels them to want to be a leader. And yet they end up trying to lead a group of people where belonging should be a key characteristic, and yet they don't perhaps belong themselves.
Right. I mean, there is a key sort of mythology we've seen in society at large, and it's certainly impacted the church as well, which is that success equals security. Mm. So if I can get successful, then I'm going to get secure. Mm. And people say all sorts of things like, oh, just one more promotion, I'll feel secure. Or they'll say, I just need a bit more money in my pension fund and then I'll feel secure. Or, you know, just one step up the ladder and I'll feel secure. The reality is that success does not equal security. In fact, the reverse is true. The more success you have, typically the less secure you feel, because then you begin to become worried that other people want to do you down and actually you might lose all that you have, and so you become much, much more defensive and isolated. So success doesn't equal security, but security often equals success. So when you feel secure, you're much more likely to lead in a secure way, and because you know that you belong, you can share your leadership with others confidently, other people feel included and enfranchised, and then they grow in their leadership, and actually the spirit of your leadership is love. And so there's, you know, those who have an ambition to lead because they believe somehow that success will lead them to feel secure are always going to be sorely disappointed. Mm. But often they tend to be the leaders that wound other people, you know, most significantly, because other people become a vehicle to their success rather than an expression of their shared leadership. So we're trying to move away from what I call an iconoclastic model of leadership, where a leader stands on a plinth on their own and everyone looks at them and says, wow, isn't that a great leader? Mm. We're trying to move into this, what I call a Castell model of leadership. In the book, we we've written about these Portuguese human towers, which sounds a bit random, but in Portugal they have this group called Castelas, and they basically build human towers out in as a sort of community activity. So they put, you know, eight strong men and women at the bottom, then the next level. They go up sometimes nine levels.
Gracious.
And at the top, they send a child wearing a crash helmet. And when the child gets to the top, everyone claps. But the point is, the strong people stand at the bottom and no one sees them. And that's the model of relational leadership we're looking for, that actually the weakest get celebrated, the tower is strong, but actually the strength comes from the bottom up, not from the top down. And so that's the kind of the mechanism of leadership that we're looking towards.
Right. And you look at what you call the roots and shoots of shame that prevents the belonging. We may, just before the break, have a chance to look maybe at the roots.
Yeah, I mean, the roots of shame are very complex, and we don't want to sort of dumb down shame as a concept, but very often shame has its deepest roots in our childhood experience, a feeling that we don't quite belong in the families that we are part of, or maybe we've suffered some early rejection experiences that have clouded our view of the world and made us begin to believe that we're unlovable or unacceptable. Now, I believe that we've got a unique message in the leadership sphere in this book, because we're not just looking at our community-based leadership, but we're actually looking at our priority identity as children of God and saying, actually, our shame can be overcome, not just by belonging within the context of community or belonging with the context of leadership, but knowing that we have a priority value of belonging to God, that actually he knows us and he loves us and he accepts us and welcomes us and he's paid the price for us. So there's this sense of the two tracks of belonging being a very powerful antidote to shame. But shame is often manifest in our lives in shoots as defensiveness, aggression, isolationism, drivenness towards achievement or success, an inability to celebrate our winnings. So the shoots of shame often undo collegiate or collaborative leadership models. The roots of shame are to do with our rejection, our sense of guilt, which often then folds into shame. We feel bad about the things we do, and then we feel bad about the people that we are. Shame has its roots in experience of genuine rejection, which we take to be a statement of our true selves rather than the expressions of other people's aggression towards us. So there's lots of manifestations of shame in our lives. But I think the hard thing about shame is it's easy to say, I feel angry, or I feel guilty, or I feel happy, or I feel sad. It's really hard to say, I feel shame, because shame doesn't really feel like anything. We talk about the shame conductor as being, shame is the most powerful emotion, affect in your emotional repertoire, but it's actually the only one that hasn't got a voice of its own. It tends to distort other voices in your emotional spectrum rather than having its own unique sound. And so if we asked you, Andy, what's the most powerful instrument in an orchestra, you might say the timpani drums, or the tuba, or the first violin. But actually the most powerful instrument in the orchestra is the conductor's baton, and it's the only instrument that makes absolutely no sound of its own. Shame is like that. We can deal with all of the other emotions, but actually if we haven't dealt with shame, then the orchestra of our hearts will always play a discordant tune. And that's something we don't want to let lie. So that's what we want to deal with.
Amen. Well, you're listening to The Leadership File with me, Andy Peck. I'm joined this week by Will van der Hart. He's talking about the book, The Power of Belonging. We'll be back just after this. Welcome back to The Leadership File with me, Andy Peck. I'm joined this week by Will van der Hart. He's the co-author of the book, The Power of Belonging, subtitled Discovering the Confidence to Lead with Vulnerability. And is a book, as I said before, I believe is destined to be as valued as their books on guilt, worry and perfectionism. So, Will, you yourself have modelled the book to some extent in terms of you faced some very traumatic incident connected with King's Cross and had some kind of challenges through that and have been open about that. And in some cases, people have questioned whether you should have been as open and vulnerable as you are. So just share a little bit of your own story and how it's connected with the book.
Well, I think to start off with, I'd say that, I was definitely a shame-bound leader. Mm. When I first kind of came into ministry, I recognized there was a huge dualism in me. I didn't feel confident or didn't feel secure. And I was definitely working for approval. And I think that's very common. Then I experienced a sort of PTSD, anxiety-based breakdown after the London bombings, which you describe. And what that did, in a way, it was a terrible time, but in some ways it was such a gift to me as a leader, because it very publicly disempowered me from the narrative of success equals security. Ostensibly, I was becoming successful, but I was terribly insecure, and I couldn't hide anymore behind my abilities. I had to take time off work. I had diagnosed with a GAD condition, a generalized anxiety disorder, which is a mental health condition. A temptation at the time was to hide the whole thing away. But I felt very much that God spoke to me powerfully about not doing that and beginning to become a voice of advocacy around the issue of emotional mental health in the Christian world. There were definitely voices who said, well, you know, you don't want to talk too much about this. People will call you the mental priest. You know, it will damage your ministry. And I kind of pushed on with the encouragement of some dear friends, including Rob, who I wrote this book with. I think what it has done is it's shown me that vulnerability in the long haul is a huge blessing and not a curse. Yes, there are some people who might dismiss you as, you know, the crazy vicar guy or the guy who's a bit weak or the guy who had the breakdown. But actually, that's totally fine. If that's where they're at, I'm really happy with that. What's most liberating to me is the fact that I know that I'm leading as I am. And actually, if people accept my leadership, then wonderful. And if they don't accept it, that's fine too. But at least I know they're accepting it on real terms, or they're rejecting it on real terms. And it's very easy in leadership to create a false persona. And as soon as you do that, you lead behind that persona. And then if people like your leadership or celebrate your leadership, you don't receive any benefit from that, because you don't believe that you're actually receiving that benefit. Only the pastiche of you is receiving that benefit. Equally, if your leadership is critiqued, you can't receive that and appropriately amend your leadership, because actually they're not really critiquing you, they're critiquing a pastiche of you. So you can't be discipled. So neither can you be celebrated, nor can you be discipled. You're just watching a play and you're just playing a part.
Yeah.
But you're not authentically present. And I think one of the most heartbreaking ways to lead is to be leading with all of the authority and all of the responsibility that God's given you, but not actually to be showing up.
Yeah.
And I also think in a church where we've seen innumerate sort of scandals and breakdowns of leadership in the public square, so much of that is related to shame. And ultimately, how long can you lead from the back room without the back room becoming a poisonous place?
Yeah.
Actually, if leaders are saying authentically, look, I've got a problem, or I'm feeling really vulnerable, this is who I am, you know me, you can support me, they're far less likely to take dramatic diversion into whatever it is, drugs, illicit relationships, pornography, or whatever the issue is in the back room, because actually they're living authentically with those that they're leading, and they know that they're known. And that's a powerful gift. And that's one we want to advocate. It's the power of belonging. It's saying, actually, we're all in this together. We can do this together.
And I guess that's one of the ironies of the whole situation, is that you hide yourself because you think it's going to be painful to display yourself. But actually, you, in the hiding of that, you don't get any affirmation. You get the support that you think, because you know it's all false.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. As soon as you start hiding in plain sight, you have to keep that pastiche alive. You know, I wrote yesterday around the whole fake it to make it culture, which we reference again in the book. There is no worse career advice than fake it to make it.
Yeah.
Not because you won't make it, but because of what happens when you do make it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the problem. The problem is, you could fake it to make it, but once you've made it, the making it, the success, is based on a relational lie, a relational deceit, because you haven't been authentic. But then to belong, you have to be authentic. You have to actually show up. So your success is actually a victim of your honesty. Yes. So you're stuck in this dichotomy where you've made it, but you have to continue to fake it. You can't just put up your hands and say, oh, by the way, guys, I faked it for the last 10 years to get into this position of leadership, and now I'm going to show you what I'm really like. I mean, all your leadership credibility is completely destroyed. So you've taken terrible advice at the beginning, which has led you to a position where you're basically stuck, and you're in this inextricable quandary between succeeding and belonging. And unfortunately, that is the position that many senior leaders have found themselves in, business and in the church. And actually, a way to lead beyond that is to lead from the beginning authentically with a heart to belong. You know, I see the fake it to make it statement. I was thinking in Christian circles, people are sort of aware that that's not a good thing, but the version of culture is becoming, you know, a new thing. Sort of, I hear a lot in Christian circles now, how can you become the best version of yourself? But actually, that's even more malign than the fake it to make it culture. At least with fake it to make it, people acknowledge that they're faking it. This idea that you could be a version of you is completely malign. That says that actually you can have multiple human, authentic human realities, and life's all about trying to find best fit. I mean, the Lord knows us as we truly are, and he loves us as we truly are. And becoming the best version of us is about as malign as it can get. Indeed. We've got to be authentic in leadership, and we've got to be transformed in our leadership. And that doesn't mean creating a pastiche of ourselves and finding out which one works best with the people we're with. It's about being who we actually are. And I think until we actually engage with that reality, we're really in trouble. So the power of belonging is all about how can we get over this and begin to lead authentically.
Well, obviously, we're encouraging folk to read the book, to buy the book and read the book. But obviously, a few tips. I know this may be a ridiculous question in a few minutes as the end of a show, but a few things people are listening and thinking, crumbs, Will, you're describing me. What's the first step? What should they be starting to do if they realise that they've, to some extent, faked it?
Yeah, I mean, look, the book is the end of every book is a study guide. It's for people to actually do the work. So that's that's really important. I think there are natural things that we tend to do. One is oversharing. And actually, we've got a whole chapter about how oversharing isn't belonging. At the heart of the journey is the idea that you have authentic community with a small number of trusted individuals. One of the sort of counter reactions to work like mine is that people say, oh, you just want me to be a bleeding heart in the public square, as if every vicar or every business leader stands up and tells everyone all their dirty laundry every week to sort of validate themselves. That isn't belonging. That's just another attempt to manipulate people into a sympathy follow. Actually, what we're talking about here is you are absolutely authentically known to God, and you're absolutely authentically known and understood by a smaller group of trusted individuals who can disciple you and who you can disciple. What we tend to find is if you know who you are in the back room, you will be able to be who you are in the front room. Of course, there's appropriate levels of sharing. When I go to the doctor, I expect my doctor to wear a suit, jacket, or tie, and look professional and treat me like a doctor. If I turn up to my doctor and he's wearing a dirty T-shirt and tells me I had a big curry the night before and he's feeling a bit tired and he's not quite sure he's going to be any good, that's not the kind of service I want. He might say, well, I'm just being authentic. And I'm saying, well, I want you to be authentic and professional. So we often mistake this idea that I need to be a sort of, you know, I need to overshare as the way to belonging. Ultimately, belonging is in our hearts. And I would say if anyone listening feels like, I totally feel like a fraud, I completely relate to I would really encourage them to get this book and to read it, to study it, and to do the study guide, and to begin that journey with one or two trusted friends. But that comes from a point of saying, initially, I know that I have a problem. And the greatest challenge for this book will be amongst leaders who are saying, oh, no, this isn't for me. I've not got a problem in this issue. Just this morning, someone put something up, one of the pre-readers, because this book is out on the 1st of February, one of the pre-readers said, I'm 10 pages in, and this is throwing up some of the biggest challenges that I've read. So this is just 10 pages in. So it's obviously, you know, this is a mature Christian leader. It's obviously quite hard-hitting on that level. And I think whenever we feel like we're about to be rumbled in our falsity, that's when we get terrified and often kick back by saying, this isn't for me. So I'd encourage people to press in with the read, but get connected, be honest with yourself. If you're in a relationship, be honest with your spouse. Talk about the feelings of fraudulence. Brené Brown said that shame cannot survive empathy. There aren't any sort of brilliant psychological tools to overcome shame, apart from the brilliant reality of you're connected and you're talking. So I'd encourage people who feel shame-bound or fraudulent to begin to start talking about the feelings that they're encountering, because that the feelings are often the first step to finding recovery. So start talking and start being vulnerable about how you feel. But honestly, I'd recommend people have a guide for that journey. And I think the power of belonging is the start of that journey for many people. So I hope that those who are listening who resonate will have a read.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Will, very much. So it's The Power of Belonging, subtitled Discovering the Confidence to Lead with Vulnerability. It's Will van der Hart and Rob Waller. That's W-A-L-L-E-R. And it's published by...
It's by David C. Cook. Actually, we've got a website attached with which people can enjoy a sample chapter, and also they can watch some videos introducing all of the chapters of the book.
That's
and that's just www.powerofbelonging.com, and there are order facilities from every good Christian retailer and secular retailer right there. So it's so powerofbelonging.com if people want to find out more.
Okay, and if you go to the on-demand section of the Leadership File, I'll make sure that's there as well. Fabulous. Well, thank you, Will, so much.
Thanks so much, Andy, always for your time. Appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Well, thank you. And thank you for listening. Do log on to Premier's website and listen to on-demand recordings of Leadership File. Go to iTunes or other places where you get your regular podcast, and you can get this as a podcast, and maybe that's how you're listening to it now. I look forward to your company again next Sunday at 3:30. Thanks for tuning in.
You've been listening to The Leadership File on Premier. Andy Peck serves as a tutor at CWR, a Christian charity whose courses and publications aim to apply God's word to everyday life. Contact him via email apeck@cwr.org.uk.